Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you'll find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities which lie at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. We're having some issues with the chat room.
Let me set the stage. Let me frame this correctly for the listening audience.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
There's only one way to explain this to our listeners. We have got an untrained amateur running the switchboard tonight. I think that's.
I half expected you to say it's Stephen's fault. That's how we.
Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah, where did this come from? I'm blaming myself. What's going on? You got no internet? You got no computer? Something? You're having computer trouble on your end of the world?
Yes, I did until just moments ago. Now all of a sudden I've got internet again. And I tell you, sometimes computers can just be a little bit unpredictable. You think you got it all figured out, and then they surprise you. So
that's
yeah.
when they got you right there. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, they catch you in a moment of unawares. And so, anyway, I do have internet now, but you are running the switchboard, and I appreciate you jumping in at the last second on that. But
my pleasure to do so. We're having a little trouble uploading music, and we're having a little trouble getting the chat going, although it is now going. So if you've been trying to log into the chat, please try again, because it is there. So we hope to have chatters. And I see at least one guest there. Is that you, Stephen, or is that
No, that's not me yet. Let me see if I can jump in now.
Well, wait. Okay, if you're logged in as yourself, don't, because you're going to cause all kinds of problems, because I'm also logged in as you. So.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
I'll just stay out of the chat. You'll have to let me know what's going on there.
I'll have to tell you what's happening in the chat. So far, it's just me and guest 25145. Welcome, guest. Welcome to Fast Forward. hoping others will be joining. Sorry for the delay. And if you're having trouble getting in, I know we've had trouble with this before. It just happens once in a while that Blog Talk Radio is a little on the buggy side. I mean, we were talking last week about the difficulty that we were having around the scheduling. Was that last or 2 weeks ago? I think when
it was last week.
Actually, two weeks ago we couldn't schedule it. Last week they were promoting the show at the wrong time, right? So it was if it's not one thing, it's another, it seems. But but they're good folks and we love them. We just want them not to continue with these kinds of little glitches. We'd like this all really to get sorted out at some point.
Absolutely.
So what's going on in your world these days? I'm sorry, say again.
Oh, I was just saying, at least it's on a night when it's just us, you know? I mean, we're we don't have a guest that we
are not embarrassed in front of a guest.
Yes,
that's right. We're just embarrassed in front of our listeners. But if you listen to this program regularly, you're used to this, right? We have a weekly glitch. Actually, this week it feels like, I don't know, a couple of glitches anyway, so far. Not to say that there will be more, but... But it's part of the charm, I think. Don't you think? Really?
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that they.
It's part of the charm. It's part of the appeal. The just kind of homespun, regular guys doing a thing show that we got going on here. So anyway, how are you other than your computer difficulties? How are things going in your world these days?
Well, let's see what I can say. I've got. Here at our house, we have a new pet. We have my son Thomas worked real hard, and got I mean, really took off with his reading, and we're just sort of, you know, what would you like? I mean, basically we were, you know, talking with him, and he was, we knew he was not getting 100%, you know, to really pick up his reading, and he said, well, could I have a bunny if I do this, you know. Absolutely, absolutely. You can have a rabbit, no problem. And so he did. And so
now, for our listeners, how old of a child are we talking about?
He is 7 years old.
7 years old. So picks up on the reading in order to earn a rabbit.
That's right. That's right. And so he did. And I mean, he is. When he started reading, large words. I mean, not just little. Bee or cat or dog or stuff. I mean, he would sit there and he'd sound out principle, I think was one of the words that I thought was pretty cool. He picked that one up, and basically now, I mean, he can pick up a book like a young adult book even, and sound it out. Now he's not going to sit there and read at 7 years of age a YA novel or anything, but he can. Read a sizable story now, and we're proud of him. He came a long way in a short period of time in order to earn this rabbit. So we're calling it the Reading Rabbit. And
good name.
Yeah, he's a cute little gray bunny, and so he earned that. And that's a new little animal around our house, and real proud for him.
That's great. Well, way to go, Thomas. Way to see the goal and achieve the goal. And, you know, he's got two rewards here. One is the rabbit, which is a great pet. And the other is, his reading has come along. So it's...
Absolutely. I keep trying to tell him, Thomas, if you're good at this is one of these gateway things. If you're good at this, you can be good at anything else, which kind of leads us into the topic of our show a little bit, doesn't it?
Well, it does, actually. We're going to be talking about, among other things, what if our world is overtaken by human beings? An odd scenario that I wrote about last week. Before we get there, I've got a personal anecdote of my own I thought was kind of interesting. When you play the archive show from 3 years ago on Monday, and then we have this show on Wednesday every week, I'm always looking for these common threads between the two shows, and more often than not, there's something, right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you listened to Monday's show. It's a great show. If anyone hasn't listened to that, listen to it from the recent archive or from the past archive. It was you and PJ, and the guest was Ben Goertzel, and you guys were talking about AGI. The reason I was not on the show that night was that we were moving into this house. And
oh, okay. Y'all were moving to from the one town there outside of Denver to another town outside of Denver. So
technically we're still in the same town, but we moved from one end of it to the other. And so I was off moving house. Now today I've spent this entire day. We've been finishing the basement in preparation. We moved house in preparation for the baby coming, and now we've been finishing the basement in preparation for the twins coming. And we finally got the basement finished. And this entire day I've been moving my office down here, and I'm now, this is my new studio down here in the basement. So this is really interesting that in the same week we had the show from when I was moving and I couldn't even make the show to the week when I was moving my office because we finally finished the basement in the house we'd moved into. Anyway, just one of those interesting little things. That was a great show. We actually should have had that one for PJ Manny week. Terrific. Yeah, example of her co-hosting abilities. We haven't had her host the show in quite a while, have we? We're gonna have to hit her up for that again one of these days. One of us have to take a week off.
What are you saying, Phil?
Well, if history is any indication, it'll be me, I'm sure. But we'll see what happens. Your contract's not up for renewal
I'll do better anytime soon. I promise, I'll do better.
Yeah. So anyway, let's leap into our subject this evening, because this is a fun topic. I started off by talking about the fact that I think it was last week. I think it was a week ago yesterday. Is the day that the big war is supposed to have started between humanity and the machine in the Terminator franchise, right?
Right.
So
the 25th, or it was a couple of days ago, right?
Yeah. You know what? I'm not sure which date. No, it was last week, right? So it was like the 21st.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, the 21st or the 22nd. I think it was 21st.
You know that date kind of moved around. There was a date like in the late 90s. That was what the original movie pointed to. And then, of course, the date that just passed was the date from the Terminator television series.
Right.
The date moved around. And it's not even contradictory that the date moved around because...
No, it's not, because you got people messing with the timeline. Exactly.
Exactly, yeah. So...
So it's like nothing can be contradictory in the new Star Trek franchise because they've messed with the timeline, right? You can't call foul on anything, no matter how outrageous that they do. That's a topic for another day. But you're a good point. They have, as we like to say, as not geeks or anything, they have retconned the date that. The machines make their full-on attack on humanity. And that date is now, I believe it was April 21st, 2011. So that date passes, and congratulations to planet Earth. This didn't actually occur. So we're not living
so
in
far.
The... so far has not occurred. We're not living in the world depicted in the Terminator series, or actions that were taken in the Sarah Connor Chronicles slowed things down, and you know the date isn't coming till later. But that got me to thinking, and this is not to say that I don't take the idea of a machine takeover of the world seriously. As anyone who listens to this program knows, anyone who reads the Speculist knows, we do take that idea seriously. That is a very real possibility for the future of this planet and for the future of our species. But I got another possibility. And I think we have to be aware of it, and I think we have to take measures to prevent it from happening. Particularly an unfriendly AI. We had Michael Anisimov on not all that long ago talking about why it, of all the future scenarios you look at and consider, that's one you always have to be thinking about, and it's one that we really have to be taking steps to prevent, because it's a very real possibility. And once we start down that road, it's over. It's going to be a lot worse than, as we discussed when talking with Michael, it's going to be a lot worse than what's depicted in the Terminator movies if it ever actually happens.
Yeah. At least with the Terminator movies, there was a remnant, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In my analogy, they wipe us out as casually as we wipe out bacteria in a swimming pool, which is a, you know, real downer of a thought. But let's move from that, because I've got this other scenario, and this scenario is riffing on the idea of the machines taking over. And my idea is that I think the humans are taking over. I think there's actually as good a case to be made for the humans taking over this planet as for machines or animals or anything else. And I know that that's something that people will hear it and immediately say, well, who else, right? Humans have always run the planet. But I'm using the term a little differently, because what I'm talking about is individual human beings. Human beings have run this planet collectively for, I don't know, since we became human, pretty much. I mean, you know, certainly since the time we started inventing technology and seriously interacting with the environment, we have been running things kind of as a group. And now what's happened over the last few thousand years, and has accelerated rapidly over the last couple hundred years, and is accelerating extremely rapidly over the last 5 to 10 years, is this enormous empowerment of individual human beings, that suddenly we are able to do things for ourselves that it used to take other people doing for us, that individuals are now able to do things that at one time only a large organization could do.
And you know, a big for example is pretty much anything you can think of that, you know, people need to go to an office for now can be done outside of, you know, outside of an office. You know, if there was a time that people needed an office for a printer. You know, I mean, that, even something as simple as that, or you know, a multi-line telephone system, or you know, any number of things, photocopiers, fax machines, things like that. These things were all expensive things, and you needed to go to a central location to have use of those things. Now, of course, you know, any and all of the things I just mentioned are available very cheaply, and most of us have them in our homes now. So the reason we go to the office now is not for those things anymore. If we go to an office, a central office, it's usually to aid in collaboration more than to have use of the technology in the central location. So
that's right. The primary rationale for the existence of offices today, and I've seen that at the company that I most recently worked for and at the company that I currently work for, the primary rationale for an office is the work dynamic of the team, that
exactly.
You bring everybody together and they can interact in a way that they wouldn't be able to at a distance.
Now, telecommuting has just not come a far enough quite yet to allow that level of collaboration remotely. You know, I mean, it's there's something to be said for being face to face with people at this point. You know, now in 5 or 10 years that may change. You know, I mean, it might be that augmented reality or virtual reality, you know, or telecommuting has advanced so much that there's very little difference between being physically face to face and telecommuting. That may change, but for right now, that's really the reason people get together in offices now.
That is the reason they get together. Although the amount of collaboration that occurs amongst people who aren't in the same place is astounding, right? And people are able to do things together. You and I being the quintessence. I mean, when was the last time we actually saw each other in person? It's been 4 or 5 years now, right?
Yeah, and I mean, we've literally seen each other twice in our lives.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, you know. But
I consider you a very close friend, Bill. I mean,
absolutely,
And we've literally physically been, you know, in the same place twice.
That's right.
Twice.
Yeah.
You know, that's major collaboration goes on, at great distances now, and it's amazing kind of things that people are able to do. You know, people write books and collaborate, and, you know, write books with people they've never been in the same room with. It's amazing what people can do now.
Yeah, people can, and this goes to our point, which is that people can connect with each other in a way that at one time was completely impossible, and fairly recently was possible only for an elite. Now everyone can do it. You know, you saw Ray Kurzweil when he was on Stephen Colbert a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
You always get a nugget from Kurzweil, even if you've heard most of it before. He'll say something, and you just go, "Ah, exactly." And one of the things he said to Colbert that really caught my attention was he used the analogy of the kid with the smartphone in Africa, which is I just think is the face of the cutting edge of the human race right now. Okay, we talked about the kid in Africa who built the robot a couple weeks ago, right? But a kid with a smartphone in Africa, Kurzweil says, has access to more information today than the president of the United States did 10 years ago.
Yeah, amazing. Think
about that.
It's not even
you cannot dispute it. You know that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely the truth.
Yeah.
You know, and I would. It's amazing the things that can be learned now. You know, I mean, my kids with, you know, me and my family are sitting, you know, in a restaurant, chatting about something. And, you know, the kids mention something obscure that I don't know. And, you know, when you were growing up, Phil, if you asked a question, and I'm sure you did, I imagine, you know, a smart kid like you were would ask questions that mom and dad might not know, and they would just say, you know, I don't know. And
right.
That would be the end of it. That would be the end of it. You know, that's not the end of it now. What I typically do is I just I say, well, look it up, and I hand them my smartphone.
Right.
And And so they're busy over there while me and the wife talk for a few minutes, and then bang, they're teaching me about something I didn't know.
That's right. We live in a time when we no longer take I don't know for an answer. Now, one of the things that's been lost is, I think maybe back in my parents' day when I was a kid, is people got to make a lot more stuff up. You know what I mean? You could fake
it. The
answers,
art of
right?
BSing has taken a hit.
I think it's taken a huge hit. There's too much ability to check. This puts me in mind of an anecdote from today. One of the things that we did in finishing this basement is we moved the big TV from the loft upstairs down to the new family room in the basement, and everything was set up. We got all the cables and everything. It's all like everything's ready to go. And then I realized that for DirecTV, I need a phone line. You have to have a phone line for updating your channel guide, and you need it for if you ever do pay-per-views or any of this kind of stuff. I hardly ever use DirecTV anymore because I Roku everything. But I'm like, oh, I can have a phone line. And my brother's been helping me. Actually, he's been doing the work finishing the basement. Starts talking about what we're going to have to do to run a phone line. And he's trying to make it sound like it's no big deal, but it's just like, well, let's pull this baseboard out and we'll get this and we'll run it here. And I'm like, wait a minute. Cordless phones exist. There must be such a thing as like some kind of cordless jack or something we can connect this thing to and not have to do this. And I whip out the phone, right? And I'm like, cordless phone jack. And sure enough, it exists. You know, it's like, okay, you can, you know, plug it into power, plug your phone line in, and then plug the other end someplace else, and boom, you're ready to go. So I'm like, awesome. Where are they available? Walmart, Target, Radio Shack, perfect. So I go to Walmart, and the guy is just really friendly, and he's like, you know, you're standing in the right place. We used to carry these, and if we had them, they'd be right where you are. I'm like, great. So I figure, okay, Radio Shack's they've always got everything, right? I mean, you can't go wrong with Radio Shack. So I go to Radio Shack. The guy says, what do you, you know, how can I help you? And I tell him, I want a cordless phone jack. No clue. Okay, the guy has no idea what I'm talking about. So I describe the concept as I've just described it, right? No idea. So I said again, well, it's called a cordless phone jack. So he goes over to his, you know, little workstation, and he's tap, 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 tap. And my brother and I were looking at other things. You know, it's Radio Shack. There's always cool stuff to look at. And he comes back like 5 minutes later, and he says, I don't even know what I'm looking for. And I'm like, okay, one moment, because I had left my phone out in the car. And I go and I Google it again, right, cordless phone jack, and I bring it up, and I show him a picture. I'm like this, okay? And, you know, 2 minutes later, I'm walking out of there with one in a bag.
He actually had it on premises and didn't know what it was.
For one thing, here's the humans taking over the planet, okay? I know something that organizationally Radio Shack doesn't know about what it has. I'm standing here telling the guy he's got it, and he's like, I don't think we got it, okay? Now,
never heard of stuff like that.
Granted, the name of the product is different from cordless phone jack, and I can't remember what it was actually called. But he had a computer, and all it took was a Google search on the words "cordless phone jack" to reveal. You know, I mean, it was not that big a deal. However, he didn't do that, and I did. And that's the kind of empowerment we're talking about. It's like I don't own a Radio Shack, and I don't yet have a 3D printer where I can produce my own cordless phone jack. But even just having that information. You know, when I was a kid, you didn't go into Radio Shack knowing about gizmos that they'd never heard of, right?
Yeah. You went in there and they told you what they had, you know.
Told you what they had, and, you know, there was a good chance they had way more stuff than you'd ever need, because who needs all this flipperty-dipperty stuff? But the idea that I just in a few minutes inform myself about a product that exactly fits my need, that I go to them, tell them I need it, and then ultimately have to find it for them, that's a real turnaround. I mean, that, you know, the ability for us to navigate information and to make use of information and the level of empowerment we get from that really is a remarkable thing. And this really is a very different world we live in than the world of even a decade or two, even a decade ago, you know, obviously we all have more access to way more information than the president did 10 years ago, too.
Let me ask you this. On this topic, humans taking over, are you suggesting that an individual human might take over, or are you suggesting that, you know, humanity has together has a lot greater control in the future? I mean,
what I mean is as individuals, we become far more empowered over our own lives. Ultimately, it's really not the world we're taking over. Actually, we are. We're taking over the world one human life at a time, go ahead.
You know, basically, we had two major wars, world wars. Basically, the First World War and the Second World War were both, if you think about it, wars where technology was. It was basically a test to see if technology could be held by, you know, small groups at the top and used to control huge numbers of people. Control and exploit huge numbers of people for the gain of small groups at the top. Okay, I contend that that's basically what the Axis powers were trying to do in World War II, and fortunately it didn't work out that way for them. They did not carry the day. I would say that now, technology, the way it allows individuals to have more and more power to do more and more things. What you have here is what Glenn Reynolds has called an army of Davids, where you have small Davids all over the place doing the, you know, killing Goliath all, you know, in a thousand different ways. And because the power is no longer concentrated in one place like the office or wherever. It's now anywhere we can have a recording studio in a coffee shop if we care to, you know. We can pretty much, the means of production are in the hands of everybody.
It is the ultimate expression of what we've talked about in terms of deindustrialization, right? That's exactly right. That's where it leads. And I think the tagline here, I think this joke originated on The Simpsons, and I believe it was Spider. Right, I for one welcome our new spider overlords. Right, when the alien spiders were taking over Springfield, and the obsequious newscaster immediately sides himself with the hostile takeover. And you've heard that joke so many times. I for one welcome our new monkey overlords, our new robot overlords, whatever. My new tagline is: I for one reject all overlords, new or established. Bottom line. Technology lets me control my own destiny in a way that I couldn't before. I mean, Dave Asprey last week talking about firing his doctor, right, because he knew more about something that was important to him than his doctor did. It's the same kind of idea established authorities aren't – go ahead.
I was just thinking, you know, let's say I've got a chronic illness, and that obviously is very, very, very important to me. That's, you know, it's a major factor in my life, right? I mean, nobody would care more about that particular illness than me. And if it's something obscure that very, very few people have, then, you know, I, thanks to the Internet and everything, I could become an expert on that and know a lot more about it than the average doctor. Because, you know, think about it, the average doctor has to – you know, in some ways, he's going
has to know it all. That's right.
Yeah,
he has specialist
to know it all.
Has a huge
he has
body
to
of knowledge.
Treat average illnesses. Yeah. You know?
Yep.
Not my weird thing. Whatever my weird thing happened to be. And so, you could easily become a greater expert than your doctor down the street. You might have to, find the world's greatest expert on your problem to find somebody who knows more than you did. If you really made it your made a project of learning everything you could about it because it's about you. Yeah,
that's right. I mean, and that was David's point last week, was that, you know, doctors are good at knowing everything, but at knowing this one particular thing that's very important to me, I had the edge, right? I knew more than he did, and that's the thing that was important to me. So, the Radio Shack analogy is not as good, because obviously a clerk at Radio Shack is not a doctor, but it's the same basic idea. And no doubt that kid knows a lot about a lot of electronics technology.
You know, I think it comes down. We've got to change the Radio Shack thing. It used to be you've got questions, we've got answers. Now it's you've got questions, you've got answers.
You've got answers. Bring your smartphone.
Yeah.
Give your answers to us, and we'll sell you things.
Please, if you help us find it, we will sell it to you.
That's right. So that's basically it. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about the humans taking over the planet. And I want to get our H+ friends in on this. I think that this would be a good rallying cry for transhumanists. We need to get into that model. And I'm not saying we need to forget about the idea that the machines might take over, that there are the risks. Obviously, I'm fully invested in dealing with all of those issues. But the humans, I think, have a good shot here. And we're seeing some exciting things coming from humans. I'm going to put my money on the humans taking over the planet, and I'm looking forward to seeing that happen.
Well, there are a few things that we still do as a group better than we can do on our own. And, it seems to me that in order for us to gain more and more power as individuals, we need a couple of things. And one of them is greater intelligence. And it seems like we have access to more and more information, and we can behave as if we're a lot more intelligent than, individually disconnected from our smartphones that we actually are. Me plus my smartphone is a lot smarter than me without my smartphone. So, I'm never without it. I always have it. And so I guess I had a point here. There are a few things that we still do together, and one of them is greater intelligence. Another is energy. We have to have more energy to have the kind of future I think that we're talking about.
Absolutely.
And
I should clarify that I'm not saying that we become completely independent of each other, and I don't even know I'd like that idea, right? I don't think that's the case. I think that we become tremendously independent, much more independent than we've been in the past. But I still think people are going to need each other, and there are certain things that we're bound to do better together than we would do if we were just completely isolated from each other. And I think that's a really good point. There's a lot of just common infrastructure that we'll always share, whether it's in the real world or whether it's in a virtual world. But ultimately, there's going to be stuff, there's going to be like a common environment that we're in, or a common economy that we're participating in. And energy is an excellent example of that.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, we've got a couple energy topics for this evening. We could jump into those, actually.
Okay, let's do it.
Well, because we talked briefly, I think, last week about a major development towards what we call the solar singularity. And just very quickly, Stephen, why don't we review what that means?
Okay, the solar singularity is that point in history, hopefully very soon, when we can produce power more cheaply by way of solar than we can with coal power plants. And obviously, the hope is that if we're producing power with solar, it's clean. It's we're not putting massive amounts of CO2 and much worse things. When you burn coal, it's not just CO2. Although that's carbon dioxide is probably the biggest part of what you're putting in the atmosphere. But there's lots of other stuff that's just not good that are being put when you burn coal get it in the air. So the idea is, let's stop burning coal and find ways of doing it. And we're not just doing it because it's better for the planet. We're also doing it because it's frankly cheaper to do it that way. That's when it gets really great. When solar is cheaper than coal for producing energy, that's going to be a major point at which air gets cleaner and we get a lot more power very cheaply. So.
Now, Ken in the chat room says that Michio Kaku says that will happen in about 10 years. And I think you had referenced a prediction along those lines yourself last week. Is that right?
That's right. In fact, it could happen in some very sunny places before then. Actually, I suppose if you wanted to talk about someplace like Hawaii, We've already passed the solar singularity. Why is that? Because all of the power in Hawaii is produced with diesel generators. And it's actually cheaper in Hawaii with all their sun to produce power by way of solar than it is by, you know, importing diesel to burn in a generator. It's and so
because the diesel's got to come via ship, right? I mean, it's there's
yeah.
no the, coal's not an option, right? So there's all this added costs related to burning that. Whereas Hawaii, as you mentioned, generally very mild climate, sunny, and a long day too, because they're and a consistent day because they're closer to the equator. They're down there in the south, so you get a lot of sunlight. So Hawaii is kind of the vanguard here. They've already, you're saying, economically speaking, it's a better deal to use solar energy than to use fossil fuels in Hawaii.
That's right. Now, of course, solar comes with all, you know, all the caveats with solar include the fact that you only get solar in the daytime. You know, I mean, and so, I suppose that at least for the foreseeable future, you know, you're not going to stop the generators running in Hawaii. What you could see, though, is that the generators burn less diesel. You know, you're importing less diesel into Hawaii to run those generators because during the daytime we're getting plenty of sun. There are ways to store the power, and one of the ways is molten salt. You know, you heat up the salt with the energy from the sun, and that heat from the molten salt you can produce power all night long that way, or most of the night. And so they're working with ways of doing that. The only problem, salt is corrosive, and it creates problems with whatever is holding your molten salt getting eaten up after a while. So, yeah, there's lots of issues with this, but they're working on it. And, these issues with solar are going to be worked out eventually. And it's interesting. It seems like not hardly a week goes by that we're not hearing about some completely off-the-wall way in which solar is being improved upon. And we got a new story this week, even since last week when we were talking about solar.
It's amazing. Not only is tremendous progress being made, but the number of avenues through which progress can occur is just increasing all the time. You hear about, you know, it's molten salt. It's, oh, we can make hydrogen out of the power. Oh, we can store it this way, right? There's so many different possibilities. And the nice thing about that is let all those possibilities compete and let one good one or two or three good ones rise to the top, right?
Well, listen to this one. This one's pretty fun. A group at MIT has engineered a virus to lay down the material in a much more efficient manner. Basically, in other words, the virus is doing the work for them in laying down the material to create the solar cell. And how much of an improvement in efficiency is that? Well, according to this story, improves solar cell efficiency by one-third. One-third is huge. You know, I mean, that's
that's enormous. Yeah, absolutely. That's a major increase. Well, I mean, the thing we were talking about last week was what was the math again? If you make it half as strong, but it costs only a tenth, right? You've got this tremendous economic benefit, right? If you're able to do it a third faster, that's a tremendous increase in productivity.
Exactly. Yeah, what we were talking about last week was a slightly different method of getting to the solar singularity, and that was making very cheaply, less efficient solar cells. They weren't even trying to compete on efficiency. It's less efficient than the best photovoltaic cells. But what they're doing is, if they can make it for cost, it doesn't matter that it's half as efficient, you know.
Right.
So there's, you know, a group working on that avenue, and here we got at MIT, they're increasing the efficiency of the best solar cells by using a virus as a nanobot, you know, as an assembler to lay down the silicon exactly the way they want to. So, you know, it's just incredible. By one avenue or another, it seems like we're advancing towards very quickly, and that's going to be huge. That's a big deal.
Well, it's a tremendous, tremendously exciting idea. It's a little scary when you talk about using viruses to do things because viruses are so powerful, that's always the disaster movie always starts with that. Hey, we got this great idea for how we're going to produce lots of solar power, right? But truly, I mean, the self-replicating nature of a virus is perfect for trying to do something like this, where you need to produce a large quantity of something, and you need it to be very precisely done. You need it to work to a certain specification. Just the difference between setting up this elaborate manufacturing infrastructure and having this nano machine, that's what a virus ultimately is, producing this correctly at the molecular level, that's incredible.
Yes. The hope is if we can tame viruses in this manner, maybe we can figure out how to keep them from making us sick, huh? That would be nice.
Let's get on that one as well, guys.
Why don't we do that too?
Solve all our other problems with viruses, and then we'll solve the problem of viruses itself, right? That's
exactly.
Save that one for last. Well, along the same lines, I had a story I put up. I've now offered my endorsement for the 2012 presidential election. You know, we don't usually do many political things, but I was so impressed by this Kirk Sorensen talk at TED, this video that I posted. I don't know if you got a chance to watch that.
Well, briefly, because I'm sure many in our audience haven't.
Well, fascinating story. Here is a guy who is a NASA scientist, and he was given the task of designing cities on the moon. If you're gonna put a city on the moon, you know what do you need, right? What do you need in terms of resources? How's it put together? All these issues, and a big issue is how do you power it? And solar is one of the first obvious things that you would say, and then you realize, oh, it's dark half the time on the moon, so all the problems you were just talking about come into play. How about nuclear? Well, nuclear doesn't translate very well to the moon because you need all this water, and there's no water on the moon, and there's all these other issues around nuclear, except for there's this other design for nuclear power plants. There's this other way of generating nuclear power. We're used to uranium reactors, and those are the reactors that we've had in the U.S. that melted down at Three Mile Island, that melted down in Russia at Chernobyl, and that they had so much trouble with recently in Japan. Uranium is a great fuel for producing nuclear power, but it turns out it's not the most effective one we have. The most effective one we have is thorium, which per weight can produce about 90 times the amount of energy as uranium. Thorium also has the advantage of not requiring large amounts of water because you're dealing with the fuel in a liquid form to begin with rather than nuclear power plants, which deal with solid fuel that can then melt down. So you have to have this huge containment area. With thorium, basically, there's nothing to melt down. So if you have a breach or a lapse or anything, basically you move spent fuel from one area to another. It's like, well, that needs to drain off here, and then now it's safe. The idea of something melting through the containment, or you know, digging a hole to China or any of that kind of stuff, just doesn't exist. There's no such thing as a meltdown with a thorium nuclear reactor. There can be accidents, things can go wrong, but just not at anything like the scale. And at the same time, you're getting a huge, just massively more energy from the reactor, which is much safer. One of the things he says in the talk is that basically a football field worth of thorium could power the entire planet for a year. Okay, so if you can, you know, picture that in terms of how much coal that would take, right, or how much diesel fuel, or even, you know, for that matter, how many acres and acres and acres of solar cells that it would take. There's all this controversy about nuclear power because of what's occurred in Japan and because of the history that nuclear power has had. But most of that has to do with the fact that probably we chased the wrong design initially. And there's a lot of established infrastructure around uranium-based nuclear power, but were we to make the switch to thorium, we would find this tremendous new source of energy without most of the problems that have plagued us with nuclear power. So I made my political endorsement. I'm saying, look, this is if not the answer, this is a big part of the answer, and I am now pledging my support to the candidate in 2012, and I hope there is one, who makes the biggest push for thorium nuclear reactors. This seems like an obvious direction for us to go. And I added the codicil. I said, okay, I'll go door to door for this candidate. And if you know me, you know that this is not the sort of thing I will promise to do, okay? I'll go door to door and campaign for any candidate. Yeah. who says, okay, we've got that plan, but we got to look out for the solar singularity too. So if somebody would seriously say, look, here's our energy future. It's thorium nuclear power and solar. And other things might come along too, but let's work with those two, because those two are tremendously promising for us right now. And we can solve all of our energy problems, it looks to me like, if we just march down that road. That individual has my support, because that individual is going to fix our economy. That's going to straighten out situations like the Middle East. I mean, there, you know, as we've discussed before, there are so many incremental benefits and unexpected benefits that occur by having more energy. Having more energy is kind of the, you know, it's one of the keys to prosperity, to freedom, to a lot of the good stuff we're looking for. So I am pretty psyched about thorium, and I think it's the way we need to go. Now, Matt Ridley had a piece, author of The Rational Optimist, had a piece in the Wall Street Journal about a month ago now, talking about thorium nuclear reactors. And one of the things he mentioned, and I wanted to talk about this earlier, the distinction, the risks associated with nuclear power. You know, there's all this fear that if we use nuclear power, someone's going to be killed. There's, you know, I mean, obviously what happened in Japan was tragic, and you don't want to see that happening. But one of the things that Ridley talks about here, and it's something Brian Wong talks about all the time, is the death toll associated with fossil fuels. And let me just read a little section here. He says, in the last year alone, 29 people died in New Zealand in a New Zealand coal mine, 11 on a Gulf oil rig, and 27 in a Mexican pipeline explosion. A human rights activist has estimated that as many as 20,000 people die in Chinese coal mines every year. So you've got this, and you know, that's just the statistics related directly to the production of the energy, not counting people who
have asthma.
You know, we're getting
yeah,
exactly, yeah. Any of that kind of stuff, any of the health problems that are a result of that. So,
which they're having a lot of in China, by the way. They're burning a lot of coal in China.
The health impacts of that.
Yeah.
Probably the 20,000 pales, you know, in comparison to what that number would be. That's probably a tremendous death toll, unfortunately, related to the health costs associated from burning all that coal. So even if we were to stick with uranium, we'd probably be better off just in terms of loss of life. But were we to actually make this leap and go with a much safer model, you know, not only do we eliminate all these other problems associated with fossil fuels, not only do we rid ourselves of those limitations, but we fix our energy problem, right? We put a realistic way in place to have a clean and abundant source of energy that we're going to need to make some of these other things happen that we're looking to have happen.
Well, there's lots to be said about good to be said about thorium. One of the things is that we have, according to this site I'm looking at right now, we have 2.5 times the amount of thorium that we have of uranium. It's very readily available. Pretty much any time you're mining coal, you're coming across thorium. Another thing about thorium is that we could encourage thorium everywhere. We could, help other countries, third world countries, put in thorium reactors. And why is that? Well, really no way to make a nuclear bomb out of it. I suppose you could make a dirty bomb because it's radioactive, but you could not make a the type of bomb that was dropped on.
That's right. That's probably the reason we went with uranium in the first place, because it's related to the technology that you need to create nuclear weapons, whereas thorium
had
no application, no real serious application for that.
Yeah, exactly. We knew about uranium because we were making bombs, and so we went with uranium when we started making power plants. That doesn't mean it's the best best fuel. It appears that, and I mean, even from the very beginning of nuclear power, thorium had people that were championing it, and we just kind of had ignored it all these years. And so it's time to take another look at it. I would say there's one other thing I would add, Phil. That person that would say, solar singularity plus thorium nuclear would probably get my vote, but it would take this need to go door to door. The other thing is, and we also need to switch over and burn natural gas in our cars. We have tons of natural gas. We have the equivalent of about 150 years proven reserves in natural gas within this country for the travel we do right now. So you know how this works. If we've got 150 years of reserves, there's more there. We just don't know about it yet.
Right.
And so as our technology improves to get more and more of it, we could. And so we've got lots and lots of natural gas. You talk about doing that one thing alone could help us with our indebtedness problem. If we're shipping money overseas to pay other people for their oil, that's not good. That adds to our debt problem. Why not just pump it out of the ground right here and drive down the road and not have that problem? So that's one thing we could do for ourselves as a country. We could use natural gas to power our vehicles. We could push towards a solar singularity so we could clean up the environment and get cheaper electricity and push thorium at the same time. And that's we don't even need, new and unforeseen technology to do any of that stuff.
It all exists.
It all exists.
That's right. Yep.
And, it's
absolutely
not like fusion where it's 20 years down the road. If we pushed for it as a country, we could be there in 5 years.
Yeah. Well, and one of the interesting scenarios around natural gas, which connects it to both thorium nuclear power and solar power, is what Robert Zubrin talked about doing with natural gas, which is you down convert that to a liquid fuel that will burn in cars that we have today. Because one of the problems with natural gas is you need a different sort of model for a car in order to burn natural gas in it. But you could actually you can actually convert natural gas, or use natural gas as a power source to convert other stuff into a liquid fuel that would burn in a vehicle that has a flex fuel engine. Also, nuclear power is a good way to do that, and solar power is a good way to do that. So it could all be part of the mix. And as things get cheaper or more expensive, you got different ways of producing the same kinds of fuels. Because you make a really good point. We need mobile fuel, right? We need fuel that will push vehicles, and up to this point, that's been liquid. Now it could be gas, it could be compressed gas. Vehicles definitely run on natural gas, but that would be an infrastructure swap that we definitely could make. I mean, there's no reason why we couldn't do it if we were sufficiently motivated to do it. But another possibility is keep most of the infrastructure that we currently have. We're used to pumping liquid, but use that natural gas to produce the liquid fuel.
Efficiency losses by doing that. Also, one of the things about natural gas in the form that it's in is that it's incredibly clean burning, which is it also allows a engine to run a lot longer. I mean, you could theoretically have an engine with 400,000, 500,000 miles on it because it burns. There's no gunking it up, So there's lots for paths, and the thing is we need energy. That's a huge part of the future. If we do it right, we could solve a lot of our problems. So with
I think we've got to get this energy thing right, because we need energy. Making a quick transition here, we need energy to power the other major transformations that are occurring in the world. So let me talk quickly about the World Transform 2. Sally's not with us in the chat room tonight, so she is either moving to Arizona or watching baseball this evening. Either way, I know she'll listen to this later. And I'm very pleased to announce that the World Transform 2 will premiere June 29th here on Fast Forward Radio. We're going to run 10 weeks from June 29th through a very auspicious day, August 31st, 2011, which is my 49th birthday, as a matter of fact. So pretty psyched about that. We're going to be running through the same basic set of topics that we talked about the first time out. The difference being, we're going to talk this time it's personal, I think, is the old tagline for sequels. And this time it is personal. We're going to talk about how these transformations impact us, not just as a civilization, not just as a society, but we're going to talk about how these transformations impact us as individuals, getting back to the idea of the humans taking over the planet, and how we as individuals can leverage these transformations, and how we can be a part of the transforming of our world.
Excellent. I can't wait. That's going to be a lot of fun. That first World Transform series was, Fast Forward Radio is always fun. It's always informative. I enjoy doing it anytime. But that was a high watermark. It was just the most interesting people were involved in it. We had some great, great guests. I was blown away every single week, it seemed like. So I can't wait. This is going to be a lot of fun.
It's tremendous fun and just a really exciting time to be able to talk with those people. And speaking of the people who participate, let me give you a heads up on who we've heard back from so far who will be participating in the World Transform 2. David Brin will be part of the program. Aubrey de Grey, Terry Grossman, Gregory Benford, Christine Peterson, and Jay Storrs Hall. And I only started sending out invitations the day before yesterday, so we'll be hearing. I'll have a much more complete list in the weeks to come. For one thing, I'm pretty sure PJ Manny and Alvis Bridges are going to participate. And if you guys are listening, open your email. Okay, thank you. I would appreciate that. But I've got more invitations going out over the next week to 10 days, and we'll keep you posted as to who's going to be participating. I'm also going to be putting a separate site up that just tracks the World Transformed. We're going to have other parties involved in the World Transformed this time out. It's not going to be strictly the Speculist. We're going to be the Speculist in partnership with some other groups presenting this event. Anyway, all those details will become available in the very near future. We'll be talking about it increasingly over the next few weeks leading up to June 29th. Exciting, exciting time coming up.
Excellent, excellent. Well, that's great, man. I can't wait. We got some music tonight, not even me this time, right?
That's right. Well, our music in celebration of the new World Transformed is going to be the World Transformed theme by Jean-Sébastien Muse. Those who listen to the World Transformed 1.5 have heard it before. I'll thank him for producing that music. And thank you, Stephen, as always, for being part of the program. Everyone who made it into the chat room tonight, thanks for being part of Fast Forward Radio. We'll be back on with the World Transformed 1.5 on Saturday, an archive show on Monday, and back again live next week. Until next time. Live to see it.